What's going on, everyone? Canadian here. We are the Honest Nerds. Today, we are here to have an intimate conversation about horror and race as we discuss Amazon's newest anthology series, Them, a series that looks at terror in America. Now, this season is about a Black family that moves to a white neighborhood and encounters malevolent forces. Now, this show has been highly rated, but also garnered a generous amount of backlash, particularly in Lena White's attachment as a producer to the show and to, quote, exploiting Black trauma. And we are joined by a guest who will help further explain those sentiments. Now, this show has been said to be too shocking, too intense for television. However, I'd argue it explores the same level of dread as Handmaid's Tale or Euphoria. Now, we're here not just to talk about this show, but also its impact and how it's made so many of us feel. So I must warn you, as I set the tone right now, because this show affected me deeply. Look, this is not my bag. This is not my comfort zone. I started this channel to escape these issues, yet this show hit me like a sniper rifle. I can't think of a show that has articulated so many of my life experiences on screen, so I can now point to episodes and say, this is what my life was like. They wound your heart and break you from the inside. To quote episode 9, I grew up in a white neighborhood. I was the only minority on my school bus, and I was beaten every single day. I was forced to sit on the floor of that bus, in the back, every day. And then every year, the older kids would show up and tell the younger ones, he sits there. You can kick him. I was getting beaten by kids younger than me with the hands-on tutelage of my peers. No teachers or bus drivers came to my defense. They were most told, settle down back there. Stop being so rough. As I grew older, I started fighting back. As you can expect, the harder I fought, the worse it got. The punches turned rocks and even urination. People see me today and they say, that never happened to you. You're 6'6". I did not always have this frame. Before my sophomore year of high school, my whole life I've been known as a short, chubby kid. And every day at school, the kids would come grab my breasts and call me titties. This show articulates how it feels to be the other, the pressure. You feel with everyone watching you, and how you have to internalize that. You just take it. There's no, I failed my test because these dudes just beat me up at lunch. It's, he can't stay out of trouble. Books aren't for him. I thought as I grew, the torture would dissipate, but it only paralleled with my resistance, ultimately leaving me being sodomized in the woods by a bunch of dudes who looked nothing like me, and they laughed the entire time. It is still the laughing that haunts me. I cannot begin to articulate the hopelessness that I felt grabbing for anyone or anything for help as they go on with the rest of the day after their afternoon entertainment. I never understood how it was always on me. The blame was always on me. So to see these moments played out on screen was very powerful. And I appreciated how shocking and raw it is. I resonated with the daughter. I created imaginary friends to help me get through. And this show was able to articulate on how being the only one who is different can affect your perception of self and beauty. It was constantly reinforced to me that I was not attractive. People would say, Tyson Beckford is hot for a Black guy, or the best I could be is the athlete. That was my predetermined ceiling. Relationships were challenging. I had people's parents tell me that their child would be a disadvantage if they dated me, or you know, they'd have a harder time in life having a Black boyfriend or a biracial child with me. Parents would refuse to meet me. I didn't garner enough respect for a handshake, let alone for them to see my face. I just wanted to go to Cheesecake Factory. When I saw episode 7, I thought of how girls would give me manicures in class by painting my hands white out. Like I said, why aren't your grades up? Why are you angry? Because if you get upset, you're just an animal who can't control their emotions. Some of these episodes, they hit me so hard, ice cream from a place of hollowness that I never felt before. And my final point, thank you for following me down this rabbit hole. These torturous events followed me my whole life and were not just exclusive to these. I was a 21-year-old man, frat boys hooted and hollered at me like I was a monkey at Buffalo Wild Wings in Virginia, blowing cigarette smoke in my face. Only by then, I was a 6'6" man. Fight back, show them the beast of the field that they've been looking for. No. You endure, persevere, I'm a human, just like you. I'm not here to relive you through all my past traumas. I'm here to share my story. So hopefully you see that this show is real and it resonates with me. It resonates with a lot of people. They wound your heart, break you from the inside, to quote episode 9. And in spite of all that I've endured, I'm grateful to be here to talk about this story, because there was a time when all of this made me want to end my story short. And I say, no matter how down you are, hold your head up, pop that chest out. I got you, kid. I'll post some links to Suicide Hotline and other important ones below. Obviously, there's going to be no ads on this video because I don't want any interruptions, as we love to laugh on this channel. It's always an amazing opportunity when we can listen and learn from one another. And we have a lot of voices I want to hear from today. We're joined by Chris, Mike, Griffin, and Soapbox J, whose podcast you can find on all streaming apps. And if you appreciate the conversation, please like the video, subscribe to the channel, so we know to do more content like this. Now, all right, we're going to start off with Mike. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Hey, no problem.
So Mike, I talked to you before we recorded about Lena Waithe's attachment as the producer, because we saw a lot of backlash coming from her. I mean, coming online toward her involvement exploiting Black trauma. And I think that carried over from Queen and Slim. And I was hoping that you'd be able to kind of just express what that sentiment was.
All right. Well, she's a writer and producer and stuff like that. I think her first like writing credit was, or for films like Queen and Slim, you know, like a Black Bonnie and Clyde and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so in the movie, they kind of make you root for them because they're on the run from the cops. And so at the end of the movie, you think that they're going to make it. But mm-hmm. It turns out like they're betrayed by another Black man, and then they die at the end. Oh. And so I kind of feel like as Black people, we kind of face racism every day. We deal with all these things every single day without, you know, any relief. And so people use TV, film as a form of escape. But in like Black people's case, we can't even do that because there's constantly trauma porn being like put in front of our faces on the television, especially with like the George Floyd case. And then the, his name has escaped me. He just got killed the other day for nothing. Mm-hmm. And so you see that every day and you just get tired of it. Like, mm-hmm. I'd rather see Black people in like sci-fi or action or, you know, horror that doesn't have to do with the racism, but it's just it gets tiring after a point. I did enjoy the show, and there's one character in particular that kind of resonated with me, was the tap dance man. He was kind of like the I look at him as like what all Black people are kind of thinking when they go things like that. Like, we all had that kind of person in the back of our mind telling us that, like, yo, I should really, like, I wish you would let us cuss on this show, but I can't. So.
I mean, you can cuss on this episode. Listen, I'm not putting any ads on this one. Tell me how you feel.
It's like, the tap dance man, kind of, he's kind of what we have in the back of our hands. Like, y'all should really bust your ass right now. That shit back then, but we don't do that. I don't know why, but
yeah, because I think it's because, you know, you can. And I think that's what the show really highlights, is that, like, oh, you can get raped by these dudes and they'll say that you killed your child. You can do all these things and they say it's your fault. And that's kind of like what I related to, is the fact, like, when I was in school, some kid comes up to you and smacks you in the face. You hit them back. They come over to you and they send you to the principal's office and they're like, this rebel rouser needs to cut it out. Someone comes up to you and calls you the N-word and you hit them back. you're the one who's getting in trouble. There's never like, you know, it's never on them. It's always on you. And that's why you have to have this like outward position that everything is always okay. And I think that we, you know, especially in this community, we often cover all that stuff up with humor to make ourselves feel better.
I keep from crying. Yeah, man. I feel it, but I dug what you said. Like, especially as my size as a black man, especially as a dark black male, I can't really like if I fought back, I would just be seen as the aggressive, you know, typical black male. That is what they want you to see. They kill your image before they go after the physical part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of have to keep the tap dance man in my mind, kind of keep him, you know, at bay. But sometimes,
You know, you're a tall guy.
Yeah.
When there would be times where I was in college and I got accused of stealing from this girl. She didn't realize that she just had her wallet in her purse, but she saw me walk by her and she called the cops on me with like public safety. She started screaming, "You stole from me, you stole from me, you stole from me." And no, it was in your purse.
Right.
I just walked by, but because I was tall and black, you thought that I robbed you. And that's that sentiment. Like you cannot, what do I care? Like when I do like flip out, like I didn't steal your fucking thing. No, that's not going to happen.
It's a trip for real.
Yeah. So I totally understand where you're coming from. Did you have any other thoughts before we toss it up to Jay or?
It's hard to give my thoughts with this show because I have mixed feeling about it. It's a good show. The cast put on like the performance of a lifetime. The whole cast was beautiful. Cinematography, the way it was shot, the horror elements were good. I've never been mad and scared at the same time. Like it's a horror show down to its core, but it just, in the first 20 minutes of the show, it made me mad.
Yeah.
It really cut me out the whole
time. I have one question for you, and then I'll toss this up to Jay.
Okay.
So I felt like this show highlighted the racism aspect of the horror just up until the point where it was like a breaking point where you get to episode 5 and it seems like the horror is all about the racism. And you get to that rape scene, you're like, this cannot get possibly any worse. And then when you get to episode 6 is when they start bringing in more of the horror element. And I felt like they did that to kind of like be slick, because you can't have 10 episodes where it's all just racism. You need something to make this digestible for people. And I felt like when they showed the family getting burned by the ghost, that was really just like, you know how these people were really getting burned back in the day, but we're going to say it's a ghost to make it acceptable so that everyone doesn't like flip out, like, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of felt that they were real slick in a lot of the racism a lot of the horror from the ghosts was a metaphor for what was actually happening to minorities back then.
Right.
And Jay, I just wanted to bring you in and ask you how this show made you feel.
First off, before we get started, man, I am so sorry you had to endure that. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, that's just hearing that.
Thank you.
Touching on what Mike said, I did message Chris about the tap dancing man. Said something real similar what Mike just said, that the tap dancing man personifies that voice in the back of every person of color's head, you know, that we hear that we want to do it and we can't because we're supposed to be better, but we're supposed to be better while we're being treated significantly worse somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I get the metaphor for it, but I found myself gravitating towards that character as well. Mm. I've dealt with racism in my life, nowhere near probably the level. I'm not going to say probably, nowhere near the level of Kaneda and Mike, most likely, because I look like this at the end of the day. You know, I'm fairer skin, but at the end of the day, I'm still brown. You know, it doesn't instantly give you a pass. You're just not viewed as bad.
Mm.
That's about it.
Yeah.
You know,
get being that good hair.
Exactly. Being Hispanic, you know, you're given some liberties where we're supposed to be exotic and the hot ones, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they treat us any differently. I remember when I was in first or second grade, I moved to a predominantly white neighborhood. I was in the same situation as you. I was a small kid. And one of the bullies, he had to be at least a foot and a half taller than me, grabbed, like, put me in a headlock and pulled my hair and said he was going to straighten my hair out. And, you know, I was small. I couldn't pull his arm. So I was able to maneuver myself enough, and I bit hard. Yeah. I broke skin. And I got in trouble.
Yep.
You know, so that situation in the school, I could kind of relate. Wasn't as bad, but I was like, ugh. And then my fourth grade teacher told my mother in a parent-teacher conference that due to my genetic breakup, statistics show that I would drop out of high school. So we've suffered similar situations, only that we would never achieve anything, that we could, like you said it constantly, we could only go so far before that barrier just stops us. Speaking on the gravity of the torture porn, I've read the comments and stuff like that, and I'm on both sides to a degree. But when we're getting to the point that we have to look for these shows to teach us the history, you know, to not have America whitewash the trauma that we've been through, they're erasing our stories out of history books. The Trail of Tears is no longer being taught down south. You need a permission slip to get to teach your kids about Black history during fucking Black History Month. We're not being taught this stuff. And when we are, we're not being taught the full story. Our history, I'm Puerto Rican. I acknowledge my African roots. Our story starts at slavery. We were never kings and queens. This is as great as we've ever been. And we're still persecuted. Systematic racism, the police, situations like this, just, we're not on equal footing. And this is as good as we've ever been. I refuse to believe that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I'm ranting, but.
No, you're doing great.
We're not being taught the proper story. And unfortunately, we have to look for HBO and Amazon Prime to teach us our story instead of our actual history books. It's unacceptable. So I understand that this goes a little bit too far, but we're not taught it. Look at Watchmen. That the Tulsa race massacre, how many people didn't know that happened until last year? I wasn't taught that in high school. I learned that when I was in college on my own intuition to learn more.
Yeah. No, I totally agree, man.
We need to do a better job. And the people who get mad about this show existing, I'm not talking about, you know, I apologize. Not talking about our side. I'm talking about the other side that is mad that this show exists. If we didn't have situations and the events that led to this for inspiration, this show would never exist. Exactly. So you don't get to get mad that this show exists. Get mad that this actually took place. And don't tell people of color that their struggle never happened.
Yeah. No, I mean, and just to piggyback on top of that, I watched some of these episodes with my parents, and, you know, they said, like, this is what it felt like. This is, it embodies the feel, and that's what's most important. And if it's shocking you, then it's doing its job, because it's highlighting what's, you know, the feel that so many people have. And I think that's really what's most important. And another thing that when you talked about, Jay, when the kid put you in the chokehold, I remember, like, it was going to these white schools, and after it got into so much, I think it was in episode 2, the father talks about how they used to torture them with the Agent Orange, and then after a while, it just started tasting sweet, and I started breaking down, crying, just thinking about all the times that, like, it was like, oh, this is another day. These kids are going to stuff my head in a toilet and try to give me a swirly. But then, like, it just gets to so much. You're just like, maybe this will be the last time. Hopefully it's the last time, you know. But it isn't. And I'm not naive enough to know that, like, all these things are suddenly going to end. And they're in the past. I know we're going to encounter more and more of them. I do want to get some other voices in here. But, Jay, I just want to ask you if you had any other final thoughts before I toss it up to Chris.
Not for now. We'll talk about the production quality and everything else afterwards, which was fantastic. But
We are going to talk about the show itself after we get through everyone's voices, but it's not just about us. This show affects everyone. It's not just shown to Black and minorities. It's shown to everyone. So Chris Griffin, we do want to get your opinions on here and how it made you feel. Chris, would you like to go first?
Yeah, man. First, I just want to say thank you for having me on with you guys to be able to hear your pain and your stories. They've impacted me just as much as this show has. And Kaneda, your story, I love you so much, man. And it's
just, thank you, man.
I'm
don't,
sorry.
Don't make me cry now.
No, I'm sorry, man. Like I'm so sorry that you had to grow up with that. And I've never experienced something like that, you know? So to hear these horror stories coming from you guys, it's visceral and it affects me. And I'm sorry I'm losing it too, because I need to take these things in. I need to live with these things. I never had a hand in any of this, but I benefit from it. You know, as a white male, I have an extreme amount of privilege that has carried me through most of my life, that has helped, that has given me immunity to the torture and the struggles that people of color have had to endure. So America needs to do more. And Jay, I want to echo what you were saying. I don't remember being taught about Black Wall Street in high school. I don't remember being taught about the Great Migration to this extent. I don't, like, everything's departmentalized down to the South, you know, and Jim Crow and folks. I don't remember ever hearing about the horror stories that African Americans had to endure everywhere. There's no safe place in the entire country for them. And this, you know, something has to be done with our education system. Like, we're too worried about offending white America. White America has sins that they need to make amends for. Like, look at Nazi Germany after that. Look at all the changes and the strides towards penance that the Germans gave to, like, you know, like, reparations for African Americans. I'm sorry, I'll try to be more focused. But not enough is being done, and everybody needs to watch shows like these. I can understand the exploitive nature of it. It's a hard show to watch. Episode 5 broke me. I remember talking to all of you guys about it when you guys were leading up to watching it, and it's a horrific thing to watch happen, and to know that stuff like that happened on the reg. It still happens to this day to people of color. It's heartbreaking. The horror elements mixed with the racism and the traumatic horror, the generational trauma that people of color, I mean, what Lucky goes through, I can't. And you know what? Again, I'm a white male, but my wife is African American. We have a son together. He's biracial. My family, I love my family so much. I love my wife. I love my mother-in-law, my father-in-law. Like, but my mother-in-law would tell me stories in New Jersey in the 1990s when they moved from a certain area of New Jersey to Westfield, New Jersey, to Somerset County. The fucking neighbors had meetings about the Black family that was going to move into their neighborhood. She's telling me this, and I can't. It's breaking my heart into a million pieces all over again. Like, I can't imagine these people that I love having to go through it in a time, you know, when I remember growing up, and I guess it's just where I grew up. Like, I wasn't taught about this stuff. You know, I was taught about, like, you know, slavery and you know, the civil rights era, but a lot of stuff is just glazed over. So to hear that this is, while I was chilling in suburbs in Mercer County, just like having like a cruising existence, my wife and her family, their neighbors were having meetings about them moving into the neighborhood. Like, it just,
yeah.
When I think about what my son will have to, you know, go through once he gets to a certain point, like, I've never feared for my life dealing with the police ever. And my wife has. And my parents never, ever had to have a conversation with me about how to act in front of police. Like, I've gotten in fights with cops before and I was fine. Like, I got to go home. I didn't go to jail or anything. Like, and to think that my son, we're gonna have to talk to my son one day about, you know, this is the way you have to act in front of police. You know, you have to know sudden movements. You have to say yes, sir, no, sir.
Yeah. No, I mean,
thank you for, you know, letting me talk to you guys about this. And
no, thank you for sharing. I mean, it's not just to say that this is going to affect people exclusively. And Griffin, I want to get you in here.
Oh man,
how did this show make you feel? I know it's tough to talk about it. I know it's uncomfortable, but I appreciate you joining us and giving your insights.
I'm gonna try to keep my shit together. Yeah, it's a hard watch. It's an important watch. Horror is at its best when it's metaphorical and it's dealing with sociopolitical issues. You look at like Romero's Dead series is all about different things and commercialism and capitalism, and to a lesser extent, I got to get my thoughts straight. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I love you guys. I really, this is hard.
It is definitely a tough topic to talk about. I'm glad we pushed this back a week, because I needed almost another week to digest on how I was going to articulate how it made me feel. And to be honest, this show came at a perfect time for me, because the only reason I'm able to talk to you guys like this and express my sentiments are because I've had 20 years of therapy, and they've been able to help me process these things. And not everyone is able to have that, you know, luxury to go to therapy, and they have to deal with these things in other ways. And I understand.
These stories are important, and like, so yeah, horror is at its best when it's deeper, when it's got more than just the surface level scares. And I think this really exemplifies that, and this is elevated by its combination of themes and effective horror. We weren't having these conversations in the 90s, Chris. Like, we weren't. Yeah. I'm really happy that these stories are being told on some level. I totally understand or can empathize with. I don't understand, because these aren't my fucking experiences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I can empathize with the trauma porn angle, and everything you said, Mike, about there needing to be a diversity of stories and not relegating the Black experience to just these trauma tales. That seems super important to me. But I'm also super happy this exists, mm-hmm. because I think a lot of people need this mirror. And this is a really people are dumb as shit. Sometimes you need fiction to hold up the mirror so they can examine the real world.
Yeah.
And I think this is doing a really good job of that. There are definitely scenes of this that I would show in like a high school level history class, not the brutality stuff, but just the othering and the way, the mental warfare, the levels of the soul destruction that these people in these communities attempted to achieve to persevere in their fucking white fucking perfection.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like when you're watching it. It's like, it's the Black families are experiencing terrorism, like gleeful, like happy terrorism towards them on a daily basis. And it's disgusting. And
The show captures a lot of the ways that white people excuse their racism and the slippery slope of that racism, where it starts more as a feeling of unease and it builds into this full-blown warfare over time. And I don't have a lot. I'm done. I'm sorry, guys.
No, it's No, it's okay. I appreciate everyone's sentiments. And I'm glad that we were able to express how this really made us feel, because Chris, like we were saying before the show started, I've always believed this, that art should invoke emotion and conversation. And this is a show that is art. And I appreciate the amount of conversation that we are able to have about this. Cause you know, like I said, we laugh about superheroes all the time. It's not often we get to talk about these serious things. So if you're still listening, I appreciate you enduring the conversation, but also just sharing this experience with us. It's not going to be all heavy because the show is great in many other aspects. I do want to talk about some more of the technical aspects of it. And
it's a phenomenal show.
Yeah, it is.
Don't let this reaction, but technically, production wise, the acting is over the top, insane good.
Yeah.
It's such a well put together show. And I think that's why it's had such a visceral emotional impact on a lot of us.
Yeah.
Cinematically, it is beautiful. It is beautiful. The editing, the coloring. I watched the first two episodes and I said, I need whoever did this to teach me color theory, because it is beautifully done. And Chris, you were saying before, like how they show the transitions between times.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. The when they're doing the flashbacks, everything's like gritty and they're using real warm colors, you know, and there's this like orange yellow haze over everything. And then when they shift back to, you know, the present time in the 50s, everything is like clean and crisp, and like the blues and the whites really like pop out, and you get that like that creepiness but like Pleasantville-ish aspect of suburbia, you know, like all the houses are the same and all the street, you know, the sidewalks and the grass is all like, and it's amazing. And the performances, I mean, the actresses that play Gracie and Ruby are just like phenomenal. Like you watch them and it feels like a window into the past. Like that's how good their performances are. Like what Ruby was experiencing in the high school classroom, when all of the white kids are like, that's, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so well done.
It's relatable, man. I tell you, but like I said, the story, it's so compelling, and then everything they do, like, I found that episode 9 flashback to be so effective, especially in black and white. It was really good. Right after episode 7 and 8, you needed some type of change up, you know, and that was just, I think it was perfectly timed and it was beautifully executed. And you know, to see that priest's kind of like a dissension into madness, I would say, was fascinating.
And like he's starting to lose his vision and everything, and that's just like having it all be in black and white, it fit perfectly in that part of the series, you know.
Yeah, and then how it ends, I thought was quite well. Like I said, like you have that beast in the field moment, and like we've all been saying, that's the voice that you hear. Like, you know, he also says it earlier, I think it's in episode 3, when he's like, you know, like, I'll come down there and I'll give you what you want, but you got to make sure that this is what you want. And I think it's always been like, you know, and then they're saying, oh, that Coon Strong, you don't want to mess with him and all that stuff. And I think, like, you know, I can only express my sentiment, like that harbors from, you're ready at any moment to go all out for, like, it's like, if you want this, you're going to get it, because I'm ready to go all out on this.
Almost like I've been waiting for you.
Yeah, I like, you know, like I felt like sometimes it's like a, like Killmonger. It's like, I've been waiting my whole life for this. Do you really want this?
Yeah, like when Lucky slapped Betty. Oh God, that felt incredible. That was so incredible. The James Brown song kicked in, and then she's walking back to the house.
Can we talk about the soundtrack?
Yeah.
The way that they did that was like, they took like modern, like remixes that modern songs take hooks from, like, and then inject them with their original forms in this. Mm-hmm. Like that was like what's that one song, like that dun 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 dun, dun,
yeah, the one that right? the next episode with Dr. Jeff.
Yeah,
I forget. I think it's an Isaac Hayes song.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it's just beautifully done. I guess my next question for you guys would be, this is an anthology series and it's exploring American trauma. I love how this wrapped up. I don't think we need to revisit this story again. I'm curious what stories you guys were interested in. The only one I could really think of that I'd want to see highlighted next would be the Japanese internment camps, potentially. Right.
The Trail of Tears.
Okay. Yeah. I like that.
Watchmen already kind of covered the Tulsa Massacre and Black Wall Street. Would that be something that you guys would think that they could explore in more depth than Watchmen did?
Watchmen was so effective in that. And like, I'll be honest, I didn't learn that in school either.
I remember watching that with you and you and I being like, oh,
is this real?
Does this really happen? No, it has to be like Earth 2, right?
Like, yeah.
And then we're like, no, it really happened. And
I think that it was really effective in how that highlighted. And I mean, I remember looking on the internet, everyone was like, what?
Yeah. I remember it's a shame how many people of color don't know that really happened. That was one of the first times that the American military actually bombed its own land.
Jesus Christ.
So I think second, maybe. And the first was a similar situation. I would be okay with that if they went in deeper to it. I mean, Watchmen did a lot with a small amount of time, and Lovecraft Country did a lot with an entire episode almost dedicated to it. But if we could see the motivation that the people had in building Black Wall Street, only to have it, you know, so to really explain, drive that point home, what kind of what made them a target exactly? Because we pretty much have an idea. We know what it is, but we didn't really get into it too much. So I wouldn't be against that. I'm sorry, I have to cut you off. Can we get into if I wanted to stay in America for the most part? Yeah. If they ever do go elsewhere, I would love for them to show how apartheid has destroyed Africa. Because I think that that's a story that needs to be told as well, because a lot of people don't know about it, or they don't think it's that as bad as it is.
Yeah.
So if they ever do venture outward, that's where what I would like to see them cover. But I've heard some people say the Holocaust, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but we've had that given its spotlight.
There's 100 Holocaust.
Yeah.
As the panel Jew. We can miss. I wouldn't mind doing some like Jewish trauma stories from the American perspective, but the Holocaust story has been told a lot.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a lot.
There's a ton of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, out there.
And there's a lot to cover for sure.
Yeah, we're still seeing that today. Like,
there was one that came out like the Hunters or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
On Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime Nazis get hunted down, I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm there to see it.
Give me a front row seat for that. No, I definitely I think that they need to keep this in America. And there is a rich, terrifying history in this country that they can pull stories from just like this.
You know what would be interesting, touching on that kind of anti-Semitism theme, is I would love to see a show that touches upon Madison Square Garden selling out for a Nazi rally. I would love to see that put on screen and like have people kind of reconcile their idea of this anti-Nazi America, USA good guys, with the fact that America had a ton of pro-Nazi sentiment during World War II. And one of the reasons we didn't get involved sooner was because it wasn't the popular opinion.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, you see that. Oh, sorry, Mike, go ahead.
I did not know that.
Yo, Mike, I'm looking at Mike's face. I'm like, what the fuck?
I thought that was just because, you know, we're going to stay out of it, not because it wasn't the popular opinion. That's
right. Yeah, it wasn't.
It was
their feet getting involved in that.
Hitler wasn't unpopular in America.
Yeah.
They're not going to teach that in school.
No, they're not.
But then
question our motivation as world police,
and
our undefeated war record. in world wars. We'd have to be critical about our own history to address that. So we'll never get to it.
And look at how they paint it up and they dress it up. You know, it's like, oh yeah, America came in and saved the day, you know, like
Russia would have won World War II without American interference. Just throwing that out there. I would also refocusing it on America. I would like to see the MOVE bombing in Philly touched upon more. Yeah. I feel like there's mad people
30 years ago. Yeah.
Mad people in like the East Coast don't know that happened.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia dropped a bomb on Philadelphia.
On a street of row
families.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Because of alleged violence against police.
Yeah.
So they burned a whole block down full of black families.
Or the black town in Central Park.
Yep. Like gotta have a zoo.
Yeah.
Gotta get rid of people. Yeah. Gotta build this park.
And that's what, when you look, I mean, I don't want to dive too much into politics, but this is what, when people are like, make America great again. This is what they're talking about. It wasn't great back then. It was great for white people. But when you hear this bullshit where people are like, oh, I want to go back to, you know, back in the day. And, you know, when men were men and when
everyone was so happy.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything was so much better. You know, like.
We didn't even talk about that. There's the show articulated levels to this because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The women. They're
they're
not even like they're seen as second class citizens, you know,
like the beginning of episode. That's why episode 5 is probably the most powerful episode of the entire series, because the not just the trauma and the loss, the torture that Lucky went through, but the way that they lay out the housing scam. In the very beginning, that the way that banks and white America scammed black Americans into living in building this generational like string of poverty where they're just gonna constantly have to keep like racing to try to make mortgage payments that are in 20% on a fucking mortgage. That's a fucking sin.
Dude, I you know, like, you can edit this
out.
That
a lot. I don't know how mortgages work.
It's a lot.
It's like you're never gonna get out from underneath that. You're gonna be paying the principal interest on that loan forever.
You're just strictly paying interest at that point. You're not even putting anything down on a house. Damn.
There's no way for you to get ahead of that at all. Yeah. You're fucked. Like,
you could edit this out if it's a little bit too controversial, but I'm trying to explain, like, you've seen me interacting with a lot of people online, and this is why I say that capitalism does not work for people of color. It works against us. Situations like this prove that systemically we're never supposed to get out of this hole. And I receive a lot of flack online. I'm called cheap. I'm called a Marxist and an anarchist and all this stuff. And that could be further from the truth. I'm not even all the way left. I'm mid left, if anything. But, you know, the way that this country has hoodwinked people into thinking that questioning the status quo must make you a bad person. But that scene right there, I loved how they articulated that these situations are not made for us to persevere. It's made for us to fuel the machine.
The white patriarchy.
Exactly.
You see that too with Helen. Like, she's trying to have a seat at the boys' table. They're never going to take her seriously. Like, she's a tool. She's there because she produces results, but they're never going to give her, she's selling out her conscience, and she knows what she's doing is wrong, thinking that it's going to give her a seat at the boys' table, the big guys' table. And it's not, it's never going to get that point at all. Like, they won't allow it.
It's interesting you highlight that, Chris, and then Mike and Jay. I wonder if you appreciate these sentiments, but it's, I always found that, like, you had to be, and I kept this rule, you had to be twice as good.
Yeah.
You had to be twice as good, because if you're just as good, you won't get noticed or you won't get credit. If there was a Caucasian person who is like just a little bit worse than you, they'll get it over you. You know,
they're still better.
They're still better because of that.
To get half of what they get.
Yeah, legit. And then I guess, kind of just to wrap this conversation up, I think I this is everything that I wanted from the movie Us, but I've come to appreciate Us and Lovecraft Country in ways that, you know, it's like Griffin, you said holding up the mirror, but not everyone can look at the mirror, and you need other ways for people to disseminate that. And I think that Us and Lovecraft Country were like the first two steps, and they walked so them could run, kind of thing. Thank you. I think that if had Us or anything else not come out before this, this probably would not have been made. You know, I think that they allowed for this space for this to be created almost. What do you guys think about like Us or Lovecraft Country in comparison to this?
Well, I'm one of the few that liked Us first viewing. I did. I'm not gonna lie. I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. I get it. It could be a little bit metaphysical with a lot of the stuff isn't right in your face for you to take it. There's a lot of symbolism. There's a lot of reading in between the lines. And while I enjoy that, it's not the mainstream mentality. The mainstream mentality does want things explained to them, and I get it. They want exposition when things are a little bit too hard to grasp. But I'm the type of person that like, again, I'm not trying to plug my podcast, but I'd like to dissect shit. You know, I really get into the theory crafting. I really get into the movements of the director's minds and stuff like that. I really enjoy that. So Us hit all the right notes for me. I love what it represented. But again, I understand. Well,
I would say now Hands Across America makes a little bit more sense to me. But at the time, I'm like, man, just say what you feel, like say it with your chest kind of thing. Don't have them doing this weird dance in the basement kind of thing. I wanted to see it. And well,
them tiptoeing like they did in the past led us to this.
Yeah.
That the foundation was built on Us and Lovecraft Country and Watchmen even, where they set the standard for kind of a, you know, not the norm of how we depict these situations for people of color. You know, I'm totally here for this, but you know, prior to those movies, we had to really dig deep, like in the indie scene, even in music, we had to dig really deep to the underground to hear stuff that was speaking to us in certain ways that we could, that I'm not trying to paint myself as more intellectual, but that the more intellectual person could sit there and just with a notepad, just kind of like dissect things. But I'm loving that it's becoming more mainstream now, because you know, like Griffin said, these stories do need to be told. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about why the gravity of these situations. And unfortunately, these things might be a hard watch, but these are things that the American people need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jay, to piggyback off that too, it's like what Get Out did too. You know, because like white America loves to play this game where we say, well, slavery happened so long ago. It really didn't. If in the grand scheme of time, when you look at it, you know, African-Americans, you know, things have been equal forever. They really haven't. The civil rights era happened in the 60s. You can make the argument that things really didn't start leaning more towards equality until like the end of the 20th century, you know, like, so having something like this and Get Out, where it shows the insidious side, almost secret hidden side of white supremacy, you know, like that's phenomenal. And that needs to be like pushed into people's faces, and people need, no, things are not equal. You know, no, black people and people of color should not just get over it. Like white people need to get over it and come to terms with the sins that our ancestors and that we directly benefit from today. The sins that were committed and that continue to be committed, you know, like Mike was saying before, everything that's going on right now, like do people just get numb to it at a certain point? Like how many, sorry, Mike.
And specifically because of COVID, because we're stuck in the house, like we're forced to see it and forced to see it.
Yeah.
Every day, especially with the George Floyd trial. This is like 2 weeks into it. The defense just like rested last week. And so they're like playing the video over and over and over again. And because we can't go anywhere, we just have to sit there and watch and pay attention.
And then you're seeing the way that they refer to, you know, Canadians, like what you were saying in the very beginning, when they're thinking of you as predators, and they're thinking of you as like, like, you know, like they call Kyle Rittenhouse, who murdered people out on the street with an assault rifle, a child, a 17-year-old kid, a child. But they're going to refer to the young boy who was killed by police in Chicago.
Adam Toledo.
Toledo. Sorry. Thank you, Jay. Adam Toledo, 13-year-old baby. Man. They refer to him as a man on conservative media.
God, I can't that's this.
Like.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm sorry to step on you, but yeah.
No, I 100%, you know, like it's infuriating. It's outrage. It's just, sorry.
You know what the issue is? And I'm going to get a little bit on my soapbox right now. The problem is that America has never properly apologized for anything. They don't acknowledge it. They won't talk about it. If we look at Germany, what they do. Okay. First off, the swastika is illegal. You cannot own one in Germany, because it is the symbol of a traitor. Every single year, the high school students, the only places that they are swastikas is Auschwitz. And the only reason Auschwitz still stands is because before you graduate, your high school is forced to take you on a field trip to Auschwitz to ingrain it into your mind that we will not go down this path again.
Wow.
So when we get to what we've dealt with over here, where is our Auschwitz?
Exactly.
We have Confederate memorials at this point. Yeah. The flag of traitors still being flown.
Yeah.
We don't apologize for shit. And then we want people of color and the others to feel welcome here somehow. And understand, until you apologize for your mistakes, why did America apologize for Nazi Germany? They didn't really, they fought against it. I mean, late, but they fought against it. So America needs to apologize to the African Americans first and foremost, and everybody else down the line. And then start to go, we're seeing incremental changes that I hope are kind of paving the way for new things. But it's a shame that we're just seeing it now.
Yeah.
Hopefully by the time my daughter is of age, this isn't something that exists for her.
Mm.
That I can just tell her stories about racism and she'll look at me with disbelief.
Yeah. But you, Jay, like 100%, man.
Kind of have a feeling that's not going to be the case.
Well, at the very least, we all have these experiences that we can share with the next generation and those for, teach them, and hopefully they learn from us. Griffin, did you want to say something?
You might edit this out if it doesn't flow well, but yeah, I do want to touch the question you asked about, like the comparison to us and Lovecraft Country, I think is super interesting, because mm-hmm. they're all superficially in the same genre, but they handle that genre super differently.
Yeah.
Like Lovecraft Country at its core is a reclamation story. It's about reclaiming magic and reclaiming fantasy and reclaiming sci-fi. And not allowing these things to be whitewashed. And they do that metaphorically, visually, throughout the series with the comeuppance the white villains get. And they do it through the story as a literal reclamation.
Mm.
Us is more about that mirror up to society and the self, and confronting like the inner and outer demons. And this is like a stark, unflinching look at what a big piece of shit a lot of American history is. And it's, I like the way that this show metaphorically and like directly addresses it. Right. We touched on a lot of the different demons these characters are literally facing, culminating in a bad Christian white devil. And we see Ruby facing her demons of not wanting to embrace her blackness and feeling like life would be easier if she could become white. We see Gracie facing like the educational demons and the discrimination through that. We see the mental health challenges black women face every day. And they're just in general, the health challenges, healthcare racism isn't talked enough about, but we see the way that those struggles are handled by the predominantly white staff and white doctors. Her cries aren't paid attention to, her words aren't given any credence. She's denied the basic things that would be given to a white patient. And she's lied to you directly to manipulate her situation. And we see the father dealing with his own feelings of society reflecting this rage as an evil property and dehumanizing him. And I think the way that they all face those demons at the end of the episode is like the only they really tied this together. A lot of horror doesn't end strong. And they really created these individual character journeys through the demons these characters face. That I really, really appreciated seeing. And I think that I only got to watch this once. It was a hard watch, but I intend to revisit. And I think that those themes are going to really build on rewatches. And I think this is probably going to win a lot of awards this year.
I
think it will. It is masterfully done. And I think one thing that a lot of people, because like coming off Lovecraft Country, you had that comeuppance at the end of every episode. Like it would be like bad, bad, bad in 50 minutes, but then someone's getting an uppercut or something at the end.
Yeah.
It leaves you on this note where it feels good. And in this show, it's just like you get to the end and you're like, I don't want to watch another one.
And like the end of this story isn't an end. It's very much like this family is just hitting that neutral territory that other black families have to face. And that neutral territory is a literal mob and fire with police guns pointed at them. And that's, they're facing that as a family, having just literally conquered hell.
Yeah.
And they're just greeted with the devil next door and nothing's changed.
Yeah.
That's like ending with that song, Young, Gifted, and Black.
So good. Just,
and then the closing shot on Gracie's face, like the close-ups on all of their faces, and then ending it right on Gracie's face too. And that whole theater scene with Henry and the tap dance man, like
that was my favorite character, bro.
Yeah, same here.
It's a great journey.
I loved it.
Fantastic.
The makeup.
It was first of all. Fantastic. It was like hints of Pennywise, you know, and then like the historically accurate, like, you know, blackface trope that was rampant
he just like took it, made it his own. He overacted a little bit, but not too much to where perfect.
Even the overacting is on purpose there. Yeah. I think that's a play to that stereotype of a character,
right, exactly.
That the song and dance man type thing. It's the way that the duality there is so impactful and so powerful, and him being able to conquer that voice at the end and like, oh yeah.
It's the great weight journey and the gravity that Henry has been, you know, because like, I feel they do a fantastic job of honing in and focusing on the trauma that that Lucky is carrying. And as a mother, like what that loss must be, but you don't really see how Henry is like, you get the internal of it, but it's not really, it's like he's keeping it all in, you know, and like the girls too. It's like the guilt that he must be like, what if I stayed home? You know, like what if I didn't go take the girls to the movie, like the self-blame then compounded with everything else that's on him as a black man and what he has to deal with then and trying to take care of his family. It's so, oh my God, it's powerful. I don't understand how you come back from that. Like if I ever lost my son, I don't know what I would do. I don't think I would last long. You know?
I like the part at the end after he shot the tap dancing man and he wiped his face off.
The face and it was
a white man underneath it. And I was just like, man,
wow,
that really solidifies the whole thing. That you know, like why we have to ignore that voice in the back. It doesn't benefit us to listen to that voice. As good as it's gonna feel, it doesn't benefit us or our people to go down that route.
We see how we're
villainized already.
When it got to that scene, he started going the beast in the field and everything like that.
Yeah.
Everything in my body was screaming like, go out there and, you know, Lovecraft Country with a baseball bat. I was ready for it. And to see him kind of just stand out there and internalize it, I found was just more impactful because I'm like, that's what it's like. That's you. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You can't be the one out there lashing out.
To go back to another series Amazon put out, The Boys, there was one scene where I forget his name, Carlos Esposito, says to Homelander,
yeah,
he's like, I can't go crazy and lash
out. Says, I don't have the luxury
of that. That's a white man's position. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we got to keep that in focus at some time because it doesn't benefit us to be that person.
It is the perfect example of how the second episode starts, where she comes out the house wailing her gun, and everyone sees, it's like, oh, that's that angry black woman. But they don't mm-hmm. see that the fact that someone just went into her house and killed their dog.
And they all know that that's what happened.
Yeah.
Like, and they're still just like, look, she can't keep it together. Yeah.
All the white people want to like clutch their pearls and be like, oh my God, look at her. And it's like, she's like that because of you motherfuckers. Like,
and well, you was plotting that on her.
That one scene when I forget her name, the neighbor across the street.
Betty?
The drummer from Sex Bomb. When she comes out and she says to her, you have to fix your yard. You know, you live among civilized people. This That's isn't acceptable. Like, it's like, are you serious? You like, literally told people to do it. And this
she
is
she knows
how,
that.
Yeah. That's,
like she they're manufacturing outrage on purpose. Like they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're aware of why it's happening. They're not really upset. But but being upset or acting upset allows them to flex this power position and create a narrative that paints people in a certain light. And we see that all the time. The last year, how many Karen videos have gone wildly viral? Like it's the same. It's that same mentality.
They weaponize victimhood. You know, when they have, there's no victimhood for them to have, you know, but they flex this faux outrage where they're just like, oh my God, like let's cancel Dr. How can you cancel Dr. Seuss? Oh my God. But not addressing the fact that a 13-year-old baby was just murdered, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the conversation. And I kind of want to wrap it up because I don't want it to go on for too long. But,
yeah.
Mike, my final point would be that I appreciate what you said at the beginning of the episode where you said that it's just always the black trauma and it's not necessarily the hero side of it. And I completely empathize with that. Where like now, it's like if you said that there was going to be a black Batman or a black Superman, it's kind of like the thing of Del being a president. I never saw myself in that. I never even like was like, oh, why? Like, I can't don the cowl kind of mentality. But now you kind of just you want to see those images. You want to see those that representation. Can we get Green Lantern movie? You know. That type of thing. You want to see those.
Man. We were supposed to get John Stewart in the Justice League movie. I just found that out yesterday.
Yeah, he was cast and shot.
Yeah, he cast and shot a whole scene.
But GF Johns. Geoff. Anyway, we're going to wrap this episode up. Thank you guys for listening. You know, we're going to go back to our normal comic book conversations, everything like that. But when we have an opportunity where a show can really resonate with all of us and make us feel things and express them. Do you want to be able to highlight that? And as you can see, this was a very powerful show. And just thank you for listening. All right, guys. Until next time. See you soon.